don't know whether, pardon me, it's a function of advancing age and maybe incipient Alzheimer's. But when I looked at these readings a week ago, they seemed alien, foreign to me, the gospel particularly. And the immediate question came, do you love God? Really? But then that presupposes a whole lot of other questions. Who is God? Where is God? I mean, I've been a priest for 44 years. One would hope that I had some kind of familiarity with this. This would not appear alien, as it really did. And so, of course, it set me wondering. It's certainly true, as the Pope endlessly says, that the God of the cultural expression, God of the public square, has pretty much vanished. Easter has been taken over by greeting card companies, Christmas by Walmart, and literally. And I'll bet anything that I could have asked virtually anybody last week, what is Halloween really all about? The Feast of All Saints. It didn't dawn on me until a couple of days after. This is what we're talking about. The Feast of All Saints. Now, endless bales of hay and corn stalks and little kids running around in strange clothes. That's what it's about. And God, where's God in any of that? On the other hand, I am absolutely persuaded that the Pope is dead wrong when he says that, well, if we had more Gregorian chant or 16th century polyphony in the churches, then God would be restored. Or if we had the Latin liturgy and the Tridentine Mass, which is giving more and more latitude to, then God would somehow magically re-emerge from the shadows. I think he's dead wrong. I mean, if I grew up in a little Bavarian village 78 years ago, I suppose that would have some kind of plausibility. If I could somehow insulate myself from the rest of the world and the rest of reality. I don't think it works. If I were to say Mass in Latin today, would you feel more godly? Would I feel more godly? I could do it. I still can speak and understand Latin. But what earthly good, what earthly difference would that make? None, so far as I can. It would simply add another layer of obscurantism and mystification to our religion, which is subject to that kind of problem. It's certainly not the public God now that we know from Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell, who wants to kill homosexuals, abortionists, civil libertarians, and feminists, which they've all said publicly, who ought to destroy Hugo Chavez because he obviously opposes us. You remember that famous remark of Pat Robertson? We've got to take him out. We've got to kill him. Vast percentage of the American public which seems to find that a plausible understanding of God. Well, I don't. It doesn't make any sense. And God is not present in glorious ceremonies. God is somehow present in music, I think, but I don't think that the 16th century has some exclusive purchase on the reality of expressive beauty. Of the divine. So where do we go? Well, I think the key is in the beginning of a key is in this passage from Deuteronomy. Who was the God of the Jews, really? Out of which this text came, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and strength, etc., etc. He was a God that they knew experientially in their liberation. It's very simple, very clear. It's a God who freed them. The God who takes away bondage. So maybe if I were in a refugee camp in Chad or Jordan today or Syria, that kind of God would make some sense to me, but I'm not. I'm here, typical North American. So even that God is somehow inaccessible to me, except as the product of an enormous amount of thinking and cerebrating about this whole business. So we go back to those fundamental texts in Genesis, and God made them male and female. In God's own image, God made them. So I think the only resource for me is the examination of the human heart. And if I can't find vestiges or intimations of God there, all of this massive superstructure that we call religion is evacuated. And I say that with absolute seriousness. If God is not there, if God is not somehow perceptible there, then God is totally absent. And all the ceremonies and authority and decrees and laws and condemnations are simply evacuated of meaning. So what's there in the heart? Because I have to say that, at least for me, God is known. And there's a great tradition of it. God is known by God's absence from my heart. The great Thomas Merton was a big exponent of what has been classically called apophatic theology. Meister Eckhart in the 13th century, all kinds of saints talk about the absence of God as a way to come to God. God is known by God's absence. But look how that works. It's not just a whole thing. An absence is a comparative term, huh? You only are aware of an absence if you think that there ought to be something present. There is some kind of intuitive or innate sense of something that ought to be present. And the absence that we're talking about is the fact that there is deficiency or a meagerness or an incompleteness of something. And God is on the other side of that. So what do I find? Some examples. When I see all those dead bodies on the streets of Baghdad, as you can do every night, when I see AIDS orphans in Africa, when I see the normal venality and commodification of life in universities today, where we don't teach people, we teach consumers, and we market a product. And more and more, I think this is true of the modern university. But if I see all of that devastation, all of that human brutality, and something in me urges a protest, this should not be. This should not be. Then, on the other side of that, is what should be. And what should be is what I call God. When I feel myself lied to with great regularity by the government, by the church, by businesses. And again, the moment of protest. It's not just that I've been cheated. No, it's something larger than my being offended by being lied to. The truth has somehow been violated. That too is the sense of absence, which argues to something larger, to the reality of truth, which is known precisely by its absence. When I see my own life marked by cowardice and fear, and so many instances, and I know there is this tiny voice of protest, Trojan, this is not what you're supposed to be doing. This is not who you're supposed to be. And I'm not responsible for that voice of protest. It's simply there. And I think that is another instance of the image of God imprinted in me. The God who is on the side of courage and telling the truth and enduring. And above all, when I'm aware of some genuinely non-neurotic selflessness, which is often enough more than a mere impulse in me, which I often enough don't even act on, or when I see it in other people, there's a sense of absence there too. And on the other side of that absence is God. God. So, we are not, Pace Benedictus 16, we are not God forsaken. We are not God forsaken. We're not been drowned in a sea of relativism or secularism or hedonism or materialism, especially materialism. You know, we haven't loved matter enough, as a matter of fact, or we wouldn't be despoiling the earth as we are. We should be more materialistic, not less. But in all those instances, there is an aperture, an opening to that mystery, as Thomas Aquinas always referred to God, that mysterious other that we call God. There is that. And so we hang on to that.